Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome to the On Point Podcast. This is your host, Luke Elshoff, a first year hailing from Region 8 based in NCFCA. This is a weekly podcast where I'll have a guest on the show and cover something in speech or debate. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome back to another episode. Today I'm joined by Christian Park. In 2022, Christian won a qualifier and ended up placing 8th at Nationals. And this past season, Christian and his partner Gage won a qualifier, the North Carolina National Open, and last but not least, went solo and won at Ziggy's National Championship. Thanks for being on.
Thanks, Luke. Great to be back.
Great. So tell me a little bit about yourself now that you're graduating from NCFCA in high school. What are your future plans?
Sure. So I'm planning on attending Vanderbilt next year, or I guess this coming fall. I want to try to do a little bit of debate there. I think I'm going to be focusing a lot on mock trial because I'm hoping to go into law school after undergrad. So I think mock trial will be a little bit more relevant to what I'm going to be doing. But I think NCFCA in general is going to help with that for sure. Even if I'm not doing debate specifically, the rhetorical skills that I learned in NCFCA is definitely going to apply.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what type of law that you're going into, or just law in general?
Not specifically, no. I think I'm just going to try a lot of different things out in college, and then I'm sure when the time comes, I'll know maybe a little bit more specifically what I want to do. But right now, I think I'm just pursuing law in general.
Sounds good. So throughout your career in NCFCA, what would you say throughout these, 3 years, right?
3 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 3 years. What would you say has impacted you the most, generally and also debate related?
I would say the biggest impact was probably the people that I met and the friends that I made, all those connections. And I think they impacted me for two important reasons. The first reason is because pretty much the people are the only reason I continue to do NCFCA. I think making friends is very important because you can like the debate aspect of NCFCA, but when you actually go to tournaments, if you don't have good friends to hang out with, I don't think it'll be really enjoyable. Especially, I just came back from Nationals where you're stuck on a campus for a full week. It was super nice to just hang out with my friends. And I think another important aspect of making a lot of friends is that you kind of feed off of each other, learn from each other, and grow together. It was super cool just to see how, like, the friends that I made in my first year, none of us were very good. But as, you know, the years progressed, we all began to become more skillful together. And then by the end, where we're all graduating now, you know, like, we're all nationally ranked. I think that's super cool to see.
Absolutely. Yeah, friends definitely are what motivate you and push you to become better. So that's why friends are so important, both inside of debate and out. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about prep, pre-tourney prep, and also just practice rounds in general. So would you say that the work that you've put in before this actual season, would you say that it's paid off?
So are we talking about just before the tournament started, like, completely, or before each individual tournament?
Before the tournament started completely in the preseason.
I would say yes. It's a little bit confusing to answer this question because it did help. Like, doing a lot of prep before the tournament season started helped me get a good grasp on, like, the topic and the relevant arguments. But by the end of the season, I really wasn't using any of the research and the arguments I came up with before the tournament season actually began. So I would say yes and no. I think this was my first year doing team policy, so I didn't really know what I was doing. And I actually ended up doing a lot of irrelevant stuff that I really didn't have to do. But I think it was a good learning experience. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm glad that I did all the research that I did, because, I mean, even if it wasn't super helpful, I think it helped me get a good grasp on what to do and what not to do in terms of research.
Yeah. How much prep did you actually do, prep and research? And would that, and the amount of time that you've put into it, would the results that you've seen this season justify it?
I would say so, yeah. I actually started like back in July, I would even say. I think my partner and I began to write our 1AC in July. And I did a lot of research, you know, in the very beginning months of the season. And it's not even just limited to research. I did a lot of practice rounds. I just really wanted to get a good grasp on how to do team policy, because I always did LD until this year. And then I was like, okay, this is a new style. I have no idea how to do team policy. And so I just did a lot of practice rounds. I got on calls with people who knew how to do TP, and I just was asking them, like, how do you debate team policy? What's different from Lincoln Douglas? So I would say, yeah, definitely helped to get an early start. And just, you know, I had a lot of catching up to do, but I think all the work they did going up to the tournament season really helped me, I guess, skip that learning curve, transferring from LD to TP. And I was pretty prepared by the first tournament.
Yeah. So how many hours are we talking here? Like hundreds of hours?
I don't know, dude. I did it. Okay, so I did a lot of research, like in the summer and, you know, like August, September, November. And then once the tournament season actually started, I kind of started slacking off a little bit. But I would say if I were to add all the hours that I did of research, it should be over 100 hours. Definitely did about an hour to 2 hours every single day leading up to the tournament season. And so, yeah, I would say like roughly around maybe 150 hours throughout the season. That's just a ballpark number, but I would say around there.
Is that something that's normal? And talking from a LDer, is 150 hours something normal that you would see in team policy prep?
Honestly, I have no idea. I know there are some teams that take research super seriously. I was just really busy this year, so I wasn't able to do as much as I wanted to. But I would say, yeah, like, honestly, if you want to get good evidence on all the relevant cases and you want to stay up to date with all the current events around the topic, I would say you would have to do around that, if not more, in terms of research.
Yeah, for sure. Now, here's an interesting question. So if you had to completely restart your NCFCA journey, what would you do differently? And if not, or anything at all, if anything?
Sure. I would have probably taken debate a lot more seriously in my first 2 years. I didn't really enjoy debate until I would say halfway through the season last year. So I never really took things too seriously. But with that being said, I completely understand if, like, you know, debate isn't your like number one priority. So I would say if I had to do something differently, I would have, since I do enjoy debate, that is my kind of priority right now. That was like my number one extracurricular going into my senior year. I probably would have personally done more debate research, debate practice, just because that's something that I really enjoy. That's not necessarily like applicable to every single person, but that's something I definitely would have done. And I also would have focused a lot more on speeches. I really, really didn't understand the importance of doing speeches, but, like, you know, NCSCA is a speech and debate association. So I think if I were to have prioritized working on my speeches a little bit more, I really think I would have become a more a better debater, because, you know, I've kind of worked on speaking, but like limited to debate speaking. But I really wish now at the end of this, like my journey of NCFCA, that I was just a better speaker and did more speeches. So I see all my friends doing well in speeches and I'm a little bit jealous. So I think those are two things I would have done a little bit differently.
Yeah. What speeches would you have liked to have done?
Definitely Extemp and APOL. I did do APOL for 2 years, but I, again, like didn't like speeches. So I was just like, you know, I'll just do like the bare minimum and try to get by. And that didn't work out too well for me. This year I wrote a lot of cards, so I did a little bit better in APOL. But I think Extemp especially is super helpful for TP, just because you get a really good idea of what's happening in the world. And a lot of the stuff that you talk about in Extemp is applicable to team policy, and a lot of stuff that you talk about in team policy is applicable to Extemp. So I think doing both really helps bolster your skills in both events. So
absolutely,
wish I did that a little bit earlier too.
Yeah. So kind of drifting back into the topic that we're going to be discussing, when would you say people should begin prepping? Like how early should people start?
For team policy?
For team policy, Lincoln Douglas speeches, if you can give any advice on that, just in general.
Okay. So that would obviously depend on how invested you are in NCFCA and depending on how much time you want to allocate into debate. I'm assuming you're asking from the perspective of like you want to do well. And so my answer would be pretty straightforward. It would just be start as soon as possible. Like I said, I started like my TP prep back in July, so like a month after Nats. And I would say that's actually good. Like you don't want to start right after Nationals. Because if you do, like chances are you're just going to be burned out, you know, like you're going to be burned out by the time the tournament season starts. So I'd say like take a month or two just to rest, not think about debate. And then whenever you feel like, you know, you're kind of you've taken a long enough break, from thinking about debate, I would just say start, because like getting a head start on everyone and just being as prepped as possible going into the first tournament, that's going to be really crucial.
Yeah. So first understand how well you want to do, like what goals you want to accomplish. So kind of like set that out first, understand what you want to do and what something that's realistic for you. And then from that, you can determine when you should start. And even if you don't want to do that well, you should still start pretty soon. So,
right. Right.
Yeah. So what does practicing debate look like? It's kind of a basic question, but there's lots of different nuances in terms of practice debates. Can you just give me a brief overview of that?
Yeah, sure. So practice debates, in my opinion, is like the best way to get ready for the tournament season. I think there are three very important aspects or reasons why you would want to do a practice debate. The first reason is for you to test out new arguments and new cases. Going into a tournament without knowing if your cases are going to work is very scary. Actually, last year when I did LD, going into the online open, I was running this new affirmative case. And it wasn't super tested out. Like I debated once with it before, and then I ended up going 1-5 at the tournament. So you want to make sure that you know your arguments and you know your cases very well. So that's one reason why you would want to do a practice debate. Another reason is just to work on your like speaking skills and your rhetorical skills. Because for me, I've always struggled with being able to speak as eloquently as some other debaters, like my partner, for instance. So I would just do practice debates just so that I can work on, you know, being able to articulate my arguments in a very clear and simple manner. And I think practice debates are really good for those, especially like if you're doing team policy and just like practice going impromptu neg against random cases. I think that's a super good way to just like work on speaking and delivering your arguments, because, you know, you can't just rely on reading a bunch of cards of evidence. Like you got to know specifically what logical links, what logical arguments you're making, and you got to communicate that very clearly. So practice debates is really good for that too. And I think thirdly, Another reason why you might want to do a practice debate is just to observe and analyze what other people are running and what other people are arguing for. And this is kind of similar to the first point, where it's like, you know your arguments, but also you know what other people now are going to run against your argument. So you can prepare for that. You can prepare for other, you know, squirrel apps that other people are running, and so you know what they're running. You know, just, it's kind of like a information grab almost, where you're just like just doing the practice rounds so that you can see what other people's arguments are going to be, and then you can prepare for that going into the actual tournaments where it matters.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, practice debates are definitely one of the main methods that you should use when you're prepping before tournaments, because they're so important to benefiting your skills and yourself as a debater. So you yourself, as you've prepped, would you mind just kind of like specifically or extensively outline how you've prepped this past season?
Yeah. So I think there are several different stages that I kind of went through going into this season. So I know that the way I did it is probably wrong, and other people shouldn't do it this way, but I was new to team policy, and I was just kind of doing whatever I wanted to do. So I honestly started off by writing a 1AC. Like, as soon as Nats was over, I took a little break, and then we just wrote a 1AC, just like that. And then after we wrote the 1AC, we started to just like do general research on like other possible affirmative cases that other people might run. And then we just started writing like random negative briefs. And the reason I say that this is probably not the right way to do it is because a lot of like the possible asks that we thought other people were going to run, like, no one actually ran them in the season. So I'd say the proper way to do it, and the way I should have done it, was starting off, I should have just, you know, done like general research on the topic, like got all of the facts, all of the definitions that are relevant to the resolution, and, you know, just compiled them all into one massive document. And once I did that, then I could probably start looking at different possible affirmative cases that people might run and possible affirmative cases that I might want to run, and just start doing general research on that too. So I don't want to, like, something that I think is very important is you don't want to put yourself in a spot very, very early in the season where, you know, you think this is the app I'm going to run. I'm going to do all my research into this app, because my partner and I didn't even end up using, well, I did switch partners, but that app that my partner and I wrote at the very beginning of the season, like, nobody ran it in the actual tournament season because it wasn't good. And that's because we didn't do a lot of research into the resolution itself. We just said, okay, this sounds like a good app idea. Let's just write a 1AC. So I'd say first, you just want to garner as much information and knowledge as possible. And then you can start thinking about possible apps. And then in regards to negative research, you want to start off by writing general briefs. So you don't want to just write negative briefs because you don't know what other people are going to run yet. General briefs are really good because you're not looking specifically at a case. You're looking at a general topic that is, you know, like, is probably going to come out through the resolution that you were given. And you're going to write a brief on that. So for instance, this year with import-export policy, you can write gen briefs on tariffs. You can write gen briefs on sanctions. You can write gen briefs on even China. So all of those gen briefs come pretty useful in the actual tournament season, and they help you gain more information and knowledge on the topic. So you would do that. And then after you write the gen briefs and after you have general AF knowledge, hopefully it's closer to the tournament season, and then you can start joining, you know, like the case lists. You can start talking to other teams and get a good idea on what other people are running. That's when you can start writing specific negative briefs where you know, okay, teams are actually going to run this case. Let's spend our time, use our time wisely, and write briefs on this case instead of, you know, just like shooting into the dark and being like, maybe a team runs this case. Let's write a brief on it just in case. I think that's a better use of your time.
Absolutely. So would you recommend things like Ziggy and coaching to be used throughout your preseason as you prep?
Ziggy, absolutely. I think Ziggy is one of the main reasons why I was so prepared going into the tournament season, because Ziggy not only allows you to just go against random people throughout the entire nation, but like you get ballots from like judges who will actually judge in tournaments. So you can see like, I mean, sometimes you get bad ballots, obviously, but I got a lot of good feedback through Ziggy on how to make my case better, how to speak more like a TPer, just like things that was more relevant to like learning how to do TP. I think Ziggy was super helpful. And like I said, you get to see what other people are running, the ideas that other people thought of. I think that's amazing. And I think Ziggy's super helpful. In terms of coaching, it kind of depends. Like for me, I think coaching was great because I found a really good coach. And, you know, like I said, I was new to TP. So he helped me like get the fundamentals and basics down. And I was really invested in debate. So the money that I spent in coaching was kind of worth it. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's kind of a personal choice. You know, how much or how well do you know how to debate? Do you really need it? And is like the benefits of getting coaching, does that really outweigh the time and the money that it will cost? So that's more of a personal choice. I can't really speak for everyone on that. But I would say for me personally, coaching's been great. And Diggy's been great too.
Yeah. So you, in the position that you were last year going into team policy, that you had no real idea what you were doing. So if you were to guide someone through that process, what would you recommend for someone who's starting out perhaps with a new style of debate like team policy?
Yeah. So I think the two styles are a lot more similar than one might originally think. Like for me, going into TP, I thought it was going to be like super, super different. And maybe I still kind of did debate TP like LD. Like I know some people in our region were saying, you know, he debates like an LDer. He calls his main points contention still. But I think it, like at the end of the day, they are very, very similar. The only thing that's really different is like the time, you know, like the time is a little bit different and you got to learn how to work with a partner. But like, I think the fundamental basics are kind of the same. You have to learn a little bit like new terminology, like stock issues and, you know, things like that. But I would say the most important thing for switching styles is like before you actually get into thinking about the resolution, finding arguments, you just want to get the basics down. So, you know, just sit down. There's like an NCSCA guidebook for this even, which just takes you through like the basic terminology, takes you through like the basic fundamentals of that debate style. Make sure that you're familiar with those first. And then once you're familiar with those, then I would say like, you know, start talking to your partner about the things that you want to like argue about that year. Like talk about different ideas, different, because like, you know, with team policy specifically, like you have a partner to do it with, right? So like in LD, you're kind of alone. In TP, you get to like learn with your partner. So, you know, I think especially if you have an experienced partner, definitely talk to them about the stuff that you want to do, that you're like your goals, talk about, you know, even you can even ask your partner how to like do that style, do TP. I think that those are all really good things to do when you're switching styles.
Yeah. And for people who perhaps might be a little bit more advanced, how do you recommend them to start working on a new res? And I think you kind of highlighted this earlier, but for someone who's perhaps already has like some basics down, and they're a little bit confused about where to get started. Where should they start right now? As soon as possible, what should they do?
Again, I would just say like to get started with any new resolution, you just want to know as much about the topic as possible. So this year we're going to be debating about Department of Transportation, transportation reform. You just want to like make sure that you know everything about the Department of Transportation. You want to know all of the relevant ideas within that topic. You want to know about all the problems that are going on domestically within the realm of transportation. Just think about all of those things, because even if you don't use the specific things that you're researching right now, it's going to come in handy during the tournament season. Like just knowing a lot, that's always good. Like it's never a bad thing to know too much, if that makes sense. Like, the more you know, it's always going to be more helpful. Like, especially, let's say you go impromptu neg during the season and you don't have a brief on something. Well, all the research that you know about the topic, that's going to come into play then. Or like you're able to now generate argument just based off your pure knowledge on the topic. So yeah, I think the first thing anybody should do is just get a very good understanding on the resolution and all of the definitions, all of the baseline fundamental things.
Right. That's great advice. And once people follow everything that you said up till the tournament season, what should their progress look like? What should someone who is going into the tournament season have, and what are some essentials before starting out at tournaments?
Yeah, so there are no, I wouldn't say that there's like a list that you have to check off going into a tournament where like you have to have things in order to do well. But for my partner and I, going into the first tournament, we had a brief on every single case that people were running in our region. Like we joined the case list, looked at all the cases people were running. So we didn't have to go impromptu like once our first tournament because, or our first two tournaments actually, because we had done research on every single case that people were running. But I would say like that's kind of where you want to be at going into the tournament season, especially if you're starting early and you can join a case list. You know, you want to do, as long as time allows, you want to make sure that you have evidence on all the cases that you know possibly could be run. And you also want to have a very strong affirmative case as well. So obviously that's going to look different depending on, you know, how much time you have. But, you know, as long as you have enough time, and like you don't even need that much time, honestly, like just carve out like 1 or 2 hours a day. And I'm sure you can be at a very good spot as long as you just stay consistent with the work. And you know, like by the open by NC, like you should be having like, or at least we had like 30 briefs, where like we felt very good and prepared against like any case regionally. And we felt pretty confident about the cases being run nationally too. So again, like just make sure that you like put aside some time every single day, do a little bit of TP research. You'll be in a good spot.
Great. Well, as we start closing here, I have kind of like a little bonus question for moot court, actually. So how soon do you think people should start prepping for moot court? And does prep for moot court differ from TP and LD?
Actually, I would say that if anything, like moot court prep should happen like earlier than TP and LD prep, like not in the sense of like the time it starts, but the moment. Because, you know, the moot court packet drops later than the TP and the LD reses. So the moment the moot court packet drops, I think you should start research. Because moot court, you don't have as much time to do prep. And especially for people who are just starting out in moot, the learning curve is insane. So for me, in terms of moot court prep, I probably did... like when moot court the packet first dropped, I did more moot court prep than TP prep, just because, you know, I wanted to know the packet, I wanted to know all of the relevant case law as well as possible. So for moot court, I would say start as soon as the packet drops and do a little bit of research every single day. Of course if you want to do moot court at a competitive level, just because, like, you know, moot court, I think the research in moot court is a little bit more limited than TP. TP, like literally you can research forever. Like the possibilities are limitless. But in moot court, there's like a set of cases that you can read, and then that's kind of it, right? So it's possible for you, if you start as soon as the moot court packet drops, and if you do research every single day, for you to, by the first tournament, you know, have a good understanding of every single case that's in the packet. And I think that's a really good spot to be in going into the first tournament. Actually, like historically speaking, I've done very well in the first moot court tournament. Like every year I competed, I AWD'd in both of them because I really, really focused on getting a head start in front of everyone. I mean, I kind of dropped, like both years, I kind of dropped off. I peaked at my first tournament and I dropped off in the later tournaments. But I think it's super important for you to just, you know the packet and know all the relevant case law as well as possible going into the first tournament. That goes such a long way.
Absolutely. And to kind of close us off, would you mind just summarizing into about like 3 or 5 points, just like the general ideas that we've gained from this, like what you should do for prep and for TP? Could you just do that real quick?
Sure. So I think first and foremost, I said this a couple of times, going into a team policy season, you know, don't focus on, you know, what AF you want to run. Don't focus on writing neg briefs. Just focus on getting a very, very good, firm grasp on the resolution and all of the relevant definitions, topics, all those good things. And then in terms of practicing, make sure that when you're practicing, you're doing it with a purpose. You're not just practicing because, you know, for the sake of practicing. You have to have a goal going into a practice round. So whether that be, you know, testing out new arguments, you want to work on your speaking skills, you want to see what other people are going to be arguing. You know, you want to go into doing practice rounds with a purpose. That's how you maximize the practice that you're going to be getting. And then finally, I guess we touched on this a little bit with the last question, the last bonus question you gave. With moot court, you know, you want to get a, you don't want to like hold off on moot court, trust me, like, especially because you're going to be questioned by like some pretty scary judges. You don't want to make a fool out of yourself. With moot court, I really emphasize starting early and knowing your content very well going into the first tournament.
Great. Well, thank you for your tips and your insight. I really appreciate you joining me today, Christian.
Yep. Thank you so much, Luke. I had a lot of fun.
All right. Take care. All right. Thanks for listening to this episode. I would really appreciate it if you could rate or follow this podcast. It really does go a long way. If you have any comments, suggestions, questions, or just want to keep up to date, you can follow my Instagram at onpointpodcast_. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you in the next one.